Hello and welcome to another episode of Talk Nintendo Podcast. This is episode 350, the big 350, ceremonial,
is it really?
Ceremonious, stupendous 350.
No, it's not. Is it really 350?
It sure is. It sure
is.
Oh my
goodness.
And we're down a Casey. We're down a Casey. Perry's exhausted. and I planned the half of an episode at the last minute, so we're really by the seat of our pants.
What is going on? I did not realize it was 350. I thought it was 349. Are you sure?
No, hey, according to Casey Bartholomew Gibson, two episodes was 348.
You're right.
Episode 349 was heinous Korok situations.
Oh my goodness. That snuck up on us. I gotta tell you. I tell you what.
Yeah.
Alright.
And then you're tired, you haven't played anything, but I'm getting way ahead of myself. We are recording for May 25th, 2023. This is episode 350. I'm Alex Kalafi. Casey is not joining us today. But we instead have the Cornhusker himself, Big Daddy Burkham, the beautiful boy from Biowa. It's Perry.
Biowa. Yes, hello. Hello, Alexander Kulafi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, man. Doing good. Doing good in the hood.
Good.
We're recording on Audacity. Glad. That's a throwback. That's what the special thing is for this episode.
Is that it's two people.
We're recording in Audacity.
The throwback is to Nintendo News Report, where one of the hosts is just exhausted and doesn't want to be there. namely me. I'm just teasing. But we do have, I guess, a bit of a classic style Alex and Perry episode. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we are a little bit by the seat of our pants. I beat Zelda, which we'll talk about.
You beat it?
And I have... Oh, yeah. I beat it.
Nice.
And I got a review game, which I'm semi-excited. I would say I am excited to talk about. And then in the second half of the show, this isn't really a formal segment idea, but I wrote down some of the games that we know are coming up toward the end of this year, and I just wanted to talk to my friend Perry, like, hey, what's going on with Nintendo? What do we think's happening with Nintendo?
Yep. I have actually some pretty cool thoughts about that, so... That'll be cool.
I would hope they're cool.
Well, I have one idea. That's what I mean by cool thoughts. But yeah, 350. Wow. Right. It's been 350. Mm-hmm. I literally on this podcast realized it was 350. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel bad, but it's okay.
That's okay. You want to hear something cool? Is 5 episodes ago, we reached 100 episodes with me as full segment. 245 was my first formal one.
Oh, I was going to say, yes. That's amazing, dude. Wait. So we didn't celebrate your 100th full-time episode? Because I was, but we can celebrate that. We can celebrate it today.
Woohoo!
Stupid Casey. That piece of crap. I can't believe it. I feel so stupid.
It's like his worst reason yet,
Casey.
Too.
I know. Wow. Well,
like,
no,
I
it's
have
not.
A friend here.
No, that's it, not his worst
the best reason.
Reason. Sorry. World of Warcraft DLC drop will forever be the worst. At least it's not that.
It's not that it's a good reason, but it's not his worst reason.
Yeah. Yeah, Josh is actually coming over this weekend. Josh Robinson.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Where's he hail from? He hails from the regular South right?
Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Word.
Yeah.
Very nice. The regular South.
He's so mad at me right now.
Why is that?
Because I said South Carolina.
As opposed to?
North Carolina. He's like a North Carolina supremacist. That's probably the best way to put it. I'm just kidding. He hates South Carolina.
Well,
I don't know why. He's obsessed with it. He's obsessed with his hatred for South Carolina. And I love it. You know why I love South Carolina? Because my friend Casey lives there. That's why. That's why.
Do they ever hang out for being as close geographically as they are?
They're not close. Like, they're not close. Oh, okay. They're like 6 hours apart or something. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forget because I'm from Massachusetts. We're like one edge of the state to the other. Exactly. Like an hour 45.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, if you go like south or west, especially west, like people are like, oh, it's just a 3 hour drive and it means nothing to them.
That is so, and I think about that for like, you know, like countries, you know, like England is the size of what? Like landmass, it's like, I think it's smaller than Texas. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like people travel, like I could travel across England in a day easily, you know? And it's like very interesting. So,
yeah. I was in Ireland and I think they have something like 5 or 6 million people there and a fifth of them are in Dublin. And there are a few other cities with, let's say, 80,000 to maybe some six digit number, but for the most part, it's like you're in Dublin, you're in a couple cities, or there's nothing, and it's like pastures and cows, which is awesome, but it's also very different from the sheer civilization that exists right where we live.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'm hanging out. I'm actually, I gotta say, I'm doing pretty bubbly today. I was recording Three Unprepared Men last night, and I'm like, I'm not looking at Twitter. I'm not, like, looking at random video game news. I'm actually paying attention to the conversation today, which means you might actually get a more on point Alex than usual.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I was listening back to our episode, and like, Casey was saying something, and then you said something, like, completely... Like, it was hilarious. Like, it was, you just repeated what he just said. And it was like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just funny, you know.
It's,
and then you said something like, you justified it because you said, like, that you were, you know, that you were doing,
no,
that you were on, like, the, on Twitter or something.
When I say I don't listen, I'm usually doing a bit partially. But I will say, like, I mean, I've been recording podcasts for so long. And just be having like Google 12? Chrome. I mean, if I joined in 2012 Nintendo World Report, it's probably been about a decade now.
Yeah,
despite being only 15 years old.
I know.
But no, I think what happens is you do podcasts enough and then like you have Google Chrome in front of you and you just have a certain personality type where you just have a low attention span in life in general, and it's very easy to just be like, oh, I don't really know anything about World of Warcraft. I think I'm gonna see what's going on with Metal Gear Solid 3 remake rumors.
yeah we do it to ourselves.
We do, but that's neither here nor there. But this is gonna be a podcast episode of not being here or there, so I guess first off, do you want to hear about my experience beating The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom?
Let's do it.
No spoilers, of course. I guess I'll just speak broadly and philosophically about
this. It's crazy when Wario shows up.
Oh, yeah. In the depths. I actually, now that the game has been out for long enough, I had... how much progress have you made?
I haven't played since I talked last time. So I just got into Hyrule. I just got to Hyrule.
Okay. So I guess I'll wait till you play more. Are you going to play more and you've just been busy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just been busy.
Because I was a little worried, not with you, because I'm pretty confident you'll go back to it, and when you hit your groove, you're going to, like, absolutely...
Agreed.
Like, fully adore it more than you have now.
I think it's awesome, so No worries on my end.
But Casey, I was a little worried about, because you give Casey a big game, and if there's some Casey thing that's happening at the moment, whether it's sports-related or MMO-related, and you give him, like... a week or two away from the game, he'll be like, yeah, I sold it to buy Gran Turismo 7.
mm-hmm.
which is classic Casey, but he's been texting us and he's really liking it too now, which is awesome.
He has been texting us.
Yes.
So that is good.
I've been on a different trajectory. I mean, I got fairly obsessed with Breath of the Wild when I played it when it came out, like everyone else did. But I think I played like 45 hours. I never got that deep into the DLC. I've never done the Master Quest. I had like a really good time with it, but I was never, this is the best game I've ever played. But I've had a much better time with Tears of the Kingdom. And I think the reasons for that are that, one, I really like the building, and two, I really feel that adding, like, additional layers to the map, which you'll experience more, so I won't talk much about it, has just, it's added a lot of good density to the map that, like, I feel maybe for me was lacking a little bit before, and I've just had a really good time exploring. And just the Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts of it all, where you're just stapling parts together and making all these ridiculous contraptions is just so fun. And as someone who doesn't, who you won't find me dead next to a Kerbal Space Program or any game where the fun comes from building stuff. But the building in here is so simple and encourages creativity that it's hard not to just be like, I think I'm just going to make a flying machine and see what happens. And I really think there's a sense of joy and wonder that is even more present in this game than the last one. So I'm excited to see.
It's like building is a big part of it, you know? Crafting and building, you know? Like Fortnite almost.
It's a big part, but it's not necessarily as big as the... I think it seems really big up front, and it is because it's the new suite of powers. But I also think that as you get deeper, you're like, no, the stuff I really loved about Tears of the Kingdom is still... Or Breath of the Wild is still here in full force.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you start to realize where everything fits in. And it's more that this is a new way to experience what you experienced in Breath of the Wild, rather than being like, oh my god, I gotta build all this crap. Like, it's not that. It's just a new way of experiencing the type of gameplay that they introduced 6 or 7 years ago now.
Is there... So, dungeons. What do you think about the dungeons?
They're good. And they're fine. Actually... Yeah, they're good / fine. I think the weakest part of Breath of the Wild was the critical path, is how I remember it being. And that, like, okay, the story of the four guys is fine. The beasts, the divine beasts.
The divine beasts, yeah.
And you go to the four territories or whatever, and then you do this, and then you do this, and then... you fight Ganon. And all that stuff is, like, pretty good. But I remember it at least to a tiny extent feeling like, oh, now I gotta do this. Now I gotta stop doing the stuff I love about Breath of the Wild. And I gotta do this stuff for a while. And that, I think, definitely continues here. And that the dungeons are fine. I think they're pretty similar design-wise to the ones from the first game. Like, they're not... they're not small key, big key, compass, map, whatever type deals. It's like you got, and I won't be specific, but the general structure of them is you end up in a themed temple and you have to solve a few puzzles, which are usually like the 4 or 5 keys you have to find in the dungeon. And you can either do it a Zelda-y way where you solve a puzzle for each of these things, or you just sort of Breath of the Wild it, and like for example, one of the dungeons, you can just straight up climb up the walls to reach, and like use stamina potions to reach, let's say, something that had three or four puzzles attached to it, which is cool because it incorporates the game better than the dungeons in Breath of the Wild did. But and I'll even add that I like the story in Tears of the Kingdom a lot. I think it's great. I think it goes plenty of places, and I think outside of the four lands you go to and the stories, like, I think the overarching plot and a lot of the stuff you do around the edges is, like, really, really great and a huge improvement of the first game, and it integrates plot, I think, better than the first game did. But the, like, 2 or 3 hour quests that you do in each of the four areas in the first game, I think that's still here, and it's like, this is good. You know, you're seeing the different tribes, but I think maybe it's less that it's bad and more it kind of feels similar to what I did last time around. And maybe that's the part that I'm like, on.
But yeah.
But that's more negative. That's the only thing I guess I've really said about the game. So that doesn't reflect my whole experience, because I beat this game in 65 hours in 10 days. And maybe nice. The reason I'm in a bubbly mood is that I didn't play any video games yesterday, and I actually had a little bit of time to decompress and regain mm-hmm. focus, because this game consumed my life for a week and a half. And like I said, I think the exploration really compels you to see, ooh, what's over there, even better than the first game did, which is considered, like, the masterwork at doing that up to this point.
Sure. And, like, do you think, like, did the, did it consistently, meet or blow away your expectations as you were playing it?
Oh, yeah. I'll say that without specifics, like, do you remember the moment in Breath of the Wild where you see one of the dragons flying through the sky for the first time and you're like, what the heck is going on over there? Or just yes. those moments where you're just constantly surprised and it's like, wait, the game is doing this? Right? That kind of thing where it's like, what? That happened to me repeatedly throughout the course of the game and has continued to do so up until the point I've stopped playing nice. For now. So it's full of constant surprises, despite being a Pokemon Black 2-esque sort of game where they're taking the core map and building a new game on top of it. This is in a different league than that kind of thing, or like Saints Row 4, which you probably haven't played, but is another example where you take the map from a previous game and you sort of build a new game on top of that. There is the core Hyrule map here, but they've added so much with the new layers to the map that it feels completely different, so big after the tutorial.
Oh, does it feel big? Yeah. It feel different? Because again, I haven't really gotten to the point where it feels different. But like it was just a prologue. Is like, this thing's huge, you know what I mean?
It gets there. You give yourself some time to see, like, what the game has to say, and I think that's something you'll realize within a few hours, is like, oh no, there's a reason this took 6 years to make, right? Or 5 years plus testing, whatever.
Yeah, because that
and
is,
because there's so much.
Cool. Well, there you go. So, there you go. What would you give it out of a 10?
Based on a 5-star system, I would give it 5 stars. Based on a 10-number system, 9 or 9.5. I think this game blew me away consistently.
So you wouldn't give it 4.5. But you would give it 5.
I feel like the star system has a different vibe.
It just does. I agree. It's funny though when I think about it. Because you're right.
You think about the way we, or at least I was talking about Tears of the Kingdom going in. I was like, this game's nothing. I don't care. I basically anti-care. I wouldn't be surprised if the I might actually anti-care was about Tears of the Kingdom, right?
Yeah.
Or if we've used that verbiage about that game at least once. And that's definitely how I felt. But that trailer came out like a few weeks in advance where we see the Gliok, which is the Zelda 1 dragon. And I'm like, ooh, there's some stuff going on here. I didn't know there was stuff going on here.
Oh, there's stuff going on.
Well, because none of the trailers before that had any
I know. I don't understand it. It's just bizarre. Like, I know. It's crazy. Yeah.
Which is fine, because it's great when there's this giant game that you know nothing about, and then it just comes out, and you're like, whoa! Like, that's cool, and I anti-cared about this leading into it. But it consistently surprised me. It's got an impeccable vibe to it. Like, we were talking about Sunshine vibes. I think you'll really enjoy the vibe of this game as you get deeper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a net big improvement over Breath of the Wild. The 9 or 9.5, I think, is down to... the critical path is like... It's an amazing story, and there are incredible best-in-the-series moments. But on the whole, the critical path was a little bit like... Sometimes I would rather be... exploring and doing Zelda-y stuff, and it's just I'm kind of doing this because I gotta beat the game. So that's where I'm at. Is excellent, incredible time. I think it's gonna be hard to beat this thing for when we're doing Game of the Year discussions, at least for my front. And I strongly recommend it. One of the best, if not the best, Zelda games. And I don't know, 9.5-ish out of 10. Maybe it'd be 10, maybe it'd be 9, but high marks for an excellent video game.
Boom. Don't get better than that. It don't get better than that, folks. Well, it actually probably could get better than that, but yeah. Cool. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well.
Yep.
I'm excited to dive back into it. Maybe tonight. If I didn't have to record this dang 350th episode. Just kidding.
Which won't be that long.
I know. That's so funny. We should have mentioned to Casey, like, does he know? He must not know.
Well,
right?
He must, because he posts the episodes every week. I think the thing is he had a friend come. He said he had a friend coming in that he hadn't seen in a while. So I think, I don't know. I feel like unless it was like a solid number 100, I'd probably do the same thing if I had a high school buddy come into town I hadn't seen and was only in town tonight. I don't know. Maybe I'd do the same thing.
Sure. Well, I mean, but like, yeah. I
love bullying Casey.
Maybe, like, you know, record a different night, you know, do something. But maybe we'll do a big 351st episode, you know.
Sure. we'll have every Nintendo World Report staffer come on, even the ones we've never heard of before.
Yeah, yes.
And we're all going to have Audacity recordings going. It won't even be Zencaster. And then like one or two of like the newer people who haven't set up their computer for recording podcasts yet, they're going to have the weird clocking issue, so none of their audio is lined up appropriately with everyone else's.
Of course. See, now you're getting nostalgic. Now you're just making me nostalgic for classic NWR, pre-Zencaster.
Oh, yeah, where you got the snowball and you're like hot S-word about it.
Oh, the snowball. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the S and S-word is snowball.
Yeah, exactly. On this podcast, at least.
That it is.
So, yeah, you got a review game.
yes, I'll just say, you know what? I've grown to appreciate the family-friendly nature to this show. And yeah. Because as I've gotten older, by which I mean from 14 to 15 years old, I've F and Jeffed way less verbally in my life. And I think it's just respectful and nice. I mean, and there's a time to fully utilize the English language, I fully feel. But I think I have grown to be like, you know what? This is a nice, mostly clean show with a little bit of joshing once in a while. And it's like, ah, this is a nice little time. So I'm just saying I appreciate this rule you established, Perry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you appreciate it. Because I do too. Man. I probably wouldn't be on it if it was so. If it wasn't so.
Okay. All right. I got a review game that it's embargo lifted today or yesterday. Well, as of Tuesday. And that is Puzzle Bobble Every Bubble. Ooh.
You know, I actually thought about getting a code for this game because it's such an easy, jump out.
It's such an easy play.
I don't got enough time for this because, I mean, I'm not going to do that over Zelda. See, that's the thing is like you finished Zelda, so now you can just do whatever you want, you know?
Yes, and it actually gave me plenty of lead time on this. I think they gave me a full week with it, which is nice. So this is the new Puzzle Bobble, which internationally I think is known as Bust a Move.
Oh yeah.
In the States. That. You have either played this series, or you, speaking royally to the audience, have played a mini game take on this in another video game. You have definitely done one of these two things in your life. Because Puzzle Bobble, which I'll just refer to it from here forth, is the game where you're at the bottom of the screen, let's say a Puyo Puyo or Tetris style arcade size screen with like blocks and whatever in the middle, a typical puzzle game screen, and you're at the bottom middle and you're shooting orbs at a pile of colored orbs that are at the top of the screen. And if you match three, so let's say you get three pink orbs or three blue orbs, the orbs fall. And if you end up getting something at, like, the top of the screen, which is considered the bottom of the pile, the whole pile of orbs beneath it falls down. Which is not the best explanation, but you know what this game is. Right?
You know, it's funny. I do know. I only know because I've you described it well. But also, I've never played this game. Like, I actually haven't actually played a game like this. I saw Jordan's review. I watched a little bit of the review of it. And, it just looks like a... But it's like, I actually have never played, like, this Bust a Move. Remember the one on 3DS that came out? Like, I just only remember it because it was, like, on 3DS. And it came out, like, as a physical release. There's, like, a Bust a Move something. Anyway. It looks like just kind of... It looks zen in a way. Is that right? And then, like, also... what do you call it? Satisfying? Like, is it satisfying?
Very satisfying. Kind of toes the line between zen and stressful in an interesting way. The structure of this is that there are multiplayer modes. There is a Space Invaders crossover minigame where it's the Space Invaders guys, but you're playing Puzzle Bobble instead of shooting the enemies, which is a cool little diversion. But the bulk of the game is in its campaign, or its quote-unquote story mode, which gives you, like, a nothing plot, right? Where it's, like, a little bit of text and some characters.
Sure.
That's like, oh, we're in Puzzle Bobble world, and we gotta play Puzzle Bobble and pop the bubbles. How fun! And then you're given 15 levels. Like, it's if you've played Puyo Puyo Tetris, it's the exact same type of story mode.
Right.
Where it's like, here's text to give you the set of single-player puzzles. And the way it's structured is you have 7 or 8 worlds. Each world has 15 different levels, which are just single screens of puzzle bobble levels you have to beat. And if you get 3 stars on all of them, because it's like an Angry Birds mobile game style setup where if you beat it, if you beat each level in a certain amount of time, you get 3 stars and then 2 stars and then 1 star if you take too long. If you get 3 stars on all the levels, which was not difficult on the first world, you end up getting like 7 or 8 additional EX levels for each world. So it's effectively just, let's say, 90 to 120 single player levels.
And are they which different?
You can also play with multiple people. Yeah. So it's like one level will be, let's say a tutorial level will be just a few orbs, and it's like, you know, let's see if you can do it. And then the next world, it's like, oh, there's boxes which they're not affected by the colored orbs, but you can either blow them up with bombs, which are a power-up, or if you sort of remove the orbs on top of them, then the boxes fall, or there are these other, like, obstacles that work the same way. So it introduces obstacles and power-ups along the way. Like, one of the power-ups just takes out one of a color that it hits. So it's like if you shoot that special orb at, like, the blue orb, all the blue orbs get removed. Or there's a bomb that you can use to sort of do a small explosion in a radius, which you can use to knock sort of the bubbles beneath down. So it's set up almost like a mobile game where it's like different design levels of increasing difficulty across, I think, 6, 7, 8 worlds. I've played 2 of them so far, which is a decent amount of time. I think that's like 30, 40 levels. And I gotta say, for what was a weird first impression, because the game, like, it loaded at like a weird frame rate, and the cutscenes that, like, it's like that when the menu's loaded up, I'm like, this is not running at full speed. But when you get into the game, which doesn't take very long, it runs crisp, it runs cool, the level design's great, and it's like, oh, I know how this game works now. Because it is that match 3 where it's, like, really satisfying to drop, like, the whole pile of orbs if you get, like, the top corner of the screen. And then it's you sort of drop a whole stalagmite of like 7 or 8 or more orbs down, and then you just deal with all those at once. Like, there's definitely a satisfying Zen aspect. But if you want to beat a level in 1 minute and get 3 stars, which I've wanted to do up until this point, you have to, like, think really fast. Because you have unlimited orbs, and it's like it'll rotate. It'll be like, here's an orange one, here's a yellow one, here's a blue one. And you have to choose where to aim it, where to shoot it. When you do that, you have an unlimited number of orbs, but you have a limited number, you have a limited amount of time. So the challenge is not, I only have 6 orbs and I need to take care of all of these. It's, I have 1 minute, and because of that, I have to think fast. And that adds, like, a fun stress element to it. So it's very relaxing, because it's just, like, it's a very, very fun puzzle game. But it's also stressful if you go for the high scores.
Mm-hmm.
And also the, let's say the line, I think, is lowering. So, or the top of the screen starts to lower. So if it goes past a line, you lose, like so many other classic arcade puzzlers work. But it's very well designed. It seems like there's a really good amount of content in it for what I think is like a $40 game, if I remember right. Which seems like a pretty good price for it. And I gotta say, I was a little worried because, you know, I don't play co-op or multiplayer games that often, but despite the every bubble in the title, it seems like it's a very, like, single-player focused campaign, even though you can play
right
with 2 to 4 players. So I think it's a great, you know, either if you really like this type of game and you want to get it up front, it seems like pretty high quality. Like, I'd say Jordan's 8 feels like perfectly accurate. Or if, let's say, 6 months from now you see it in whatever Nintendo Black Friday sale for $25 or $15 or $20, I think that's an even better. So it's a nice high quality puzzle game from Taito.
Boom. That's good.
Yeah.
So it looks like it lives up to what it should be, which is nice, you know, and it's easy. It's hard to. And, you know, it's funny thing is I know nothing about it. Is there anything, like, do you know, is there anything unique to this release? Is it the multiplayer? That's the, because it's every bubble, which is the funniest name ever. Is that the uniqueness to it?
So, from Jordan's review, which is available at NintendoWorldReport.com, highly recommended, he said, the most recent game, Puzzle Bobble Every Bubble, adds a four-player co-op play to its story mode, which is... So I think there's a multiplayer focus to it. And I'm not saying there's never been co-op. I'm sure there's been something in its 30-year history or whatever. But it seems like this one has a lot of cooperative opportunities. And there's a bunch of other modes, too. Like, there's a survival mode, which I think you can sort of match your scores with people online. And Jordan said over 700 stages, which is a whole bunch of content. You're right. So if you like a good... If you like a good mobile style, I spent 30 seconds on this level, and up, 3 stars, nice. Then I'm going to move on to the next one. They're out 2 stars, I want to play it a couple more times to get 3 stars, and then move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. It's got that sort of energy to it. So it blends the relaxingness of a really good mobile game with the stress of, the fun stress of trying to be good at it.
Right.
So there's your Puzzle Bobble Every Bubble.
That's like everybody, right? But it's every bubble.
It's a bit of a saccharine tone to it. It's cool. It's cute.
It's nice.
So
I'll take it.
There you go. There are games for this week.
All right. I love it.
Thanks, man. Do you want to do a break, or do you want to jump right into our loosey-goosey final segment?
Let's do a quick musical interlude break, and then we'll go into our predicting the future.
Sure. And we're back.
Dun-dun-dun. And I'd like to... we need to do our live ads, our live reading ads, you know? And this...
Get Sherry's Berries going.
Yeah, or, this episode is brought to you by Puzzle & Dragon Z plus Puzzle & Dragon Super Mario Bros. Edition. Two puzzle games in one. Battle through the Mushroom Kingdom with Mario and Luigi. And save Dracomasia from destruction in an epic puzzle RPG, only available on the Nintendo 3DS physically for like $70, and you can't get it digitally anymore.
You know what's so funny is Nintendo just put out a new stability update after they shut down the eShop.
That's awesome.
So it's like, and what I've heard is, and I don't advocate for, I don't know, soft modding, piracy, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting because I think it does mess with people trying to newly hack their 3DS. And at a certain point, I'm like, you don't have the eShop anymore. Like, who cares? What are you protecting from?
They're protecting, like, resellers? protecting the scalpers, right?
It's a pro scalper agenda at Nintendo.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm fine with it.
This is a pro scalper program.
This is a pro scalper podcast. That's why we're advertising.
Yep.
Okay.
Let me see.
Jokes aside, enough jokes.
Enough quote-unquote jokes. my idea for this was... It is May 23rd as of today, posting May 25th.
Yikes.
And as of right now, we know a lot of what the summer of gaming stuff is going to look like. Like, I think Jeff Keighley's thing is dated. The Xbox thing is dated. PlayStation is going to be the day before this drops, so that'll be Wednesday. I'll be getting a little Chinese food for
nice.
It.
Nice. Okay.
But we're in May... And there's no announced Nintendo Direct, which is fine, because...
And there's rumors,
there's no
right?
There's no E3 this year. Kind of.
Rumors
but there's
of
also
the,
rumors yeah. that there isn't going to be anything also.
That's what I was saying. There's rumors that there isn't going to be a Direct.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That is what I have. I mean, we don't have any insider sources, but that's what we have heard, kind of, right, from the same, from reading the same ill repute articles that everyone else reads.
Mm-hmm.
So what I thought would be fun for the second part of the show is to look at some of the stuff that we know is coming out. And there's some third party stretches I included along with like two or three Nintendo games. And to talk about, like, do we think there's going to be a Direct? What do we think is happening with the Switch this year? Do we think anything's going to be announced? And I think it would be good to start off, and I can just read down this myself if you like, and you can react to it.
Okay,
And then I'll just read down the list of stuff that I got from the Wikipedia Games in 2023 article, and then we can just have a little loosey-goosey conversation for 15, 20 minutes.
Let's do it.
All right. June 2nd, one of my most anticipated of the year. We Love Katamari Reroll plus Royal Reverie.
Coming out. Let's right for my go. Birthday, baby.
Are you going to get it on Switch?
Oh, yeah. What else am I
think I
get
will,
it on?
Too. Well, I know you technically have an Xbox that you don't use, but
right.
The thing I have heard is that the Switch version is 30 frames and the other systems are 60, which is the only reason I'm like, I don't know. But on the other hand...
But you got OLED and
the
handheld.
The OLED
so.
Screen and it pops and handheld and... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough one. But I'm getting it day one. I mean, it's the most no-brainer of the year because this is, I believe, Keita Takahashi's other Katamari game in addition to the first one. So this is the maestro himself, his other one. On June 30th, we have Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, which I'm interested in. I have the DS one, which I haven't played, but I'm wondering if I wait for this one. If there's no content additions, I actually think I might just go back to the DS version because I get the two screens. Mm-hmm. This is sort of my take on it. Did you ever play this one?
No.
Okay. Any interest?
Nah.
All right. And then another game you don't have interest in, Master Detective Archives Rain Code, which is the guy, I forget it, his name isn't coming to mind right now, but I think it's the Danganronpa writer, is sort of.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember seeing that
big
right.
franchise. Yep, July 21st. We got Pikmin 4.
Oh,
very
baby.
Exciting.
Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm excited.
And then it's very excited. I would call my excitement level for that like an 8.5.
Yeah, I'm at a 10. Yeah, for sure. Like, that's like it couldn't be happier for a sequel. Like, it's one of my favorite franchises of all time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, now, would you say franchise or would you say Pikmin 3 is one of your favorite games?
No, franchises. Pikmin 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Yeah. Incredible.
And Let's Go.
And Hey Pikmin.
And Bloom. Yeah.
Yeah, and Bloom.
Let's Go. Let's Go is the Pokemon one.
Yeah.
August 29th, we got Samba de Amigo Party Central, which previews dropped for that today, again, Tuesday, and they're actually quite positive. So I'm like, watching reviews.
I saw like this, I can send it to you in the chat here, but this this key art for it is, it's on here. If you ever get on Skype ever again, I just sent it to you on Skype. But I think, the ugliest, like most push me away. Like, I could not find anything more repulsive art, key art, that I've ever seen for a video game. I don't mean to sound, like, super negative and stuff. I just, I mean it in almost a funny way. Like, that could not be less Perry Burkham.
So anyway. this is official, or this is a child made this?
Exactly. I don't know. And again, I don't know. I saw on a website that was the picture for the article. So
okay,
exactly.
Well,
it looks like
one of those furry posters that you used to get as a kid that you would color in with marker.
Yeah, exactly.
The dragon posters or whatever. Anyways, Either way, it looks promising, and there's actually like a really good lineup of licensed music in there, which nothing's coming to mind, but it's, I remember it being like, oh, they got a lot of, Sega seems to have gotten artists that are more above their punching weight for this than I thought it was. So maybe right. they actually have thoughts it'll do well. Sea of Stars, the JRPG from the Messenger team, is coming out, which I'm very interested in. Good demo. Mm-hmm. September 13th, we got Super Bomberman R2. I actually just bought the first one the other week for like $10 on the eShop because I'm like, oh, this was a launch game, but I haven't played it yet. And I hear it's like good-ish, but very flawed slash wabi-sabi.
Yeah, I remember playing it multiplayer, and it was just chaotic, and it wasn't in a chaotic fun in a good way. Yeah, kind of interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. September 26th, we got Minico's Night Market, which came up in the last Nintendo Direct. And I got to say, every time I see this, I get a little less excited about it. Because the first time you see it, you're like, ooh, what's this indie Animal Crossing-looking thing? And it kind of seems like it's like an indie third-person adventure-y game with stealth elements. And I feel like it's not that I think it's going to be a bad game, per se. It's just... You ever see more of a game and it like slowly goes away from the thing you sort of wanted the game to be?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's that. And then undated, and there could be other stuff Nintendo's announced that I've forgotten, but I have no idea. The Pokemon DLC is supposed to drop later this year. I think both pieces of it. And then you have Metroid Prime 4 coming out at some point. And then I don't actually know if there are any other announced Nintendo games that we know of, other than that, really.
Right.
Other than, like, Pikachu, Detective Pikachu 2, if that's ever coming out. So I guess...
True, yeah.
I guess we sort of find ourselves... Yeah. So I guess we sort of find ourselves in a interesting period for the Switch, where
very
Nintendo's
weird,
like,
right?
Nintendo's saying it's still got some life left in it, and I do believe that. I do think there's probably some more stuff in the pipeline we don't know about yet, but I don't remember a time where there's been this little announced for it. So I guess
it does.
We got Pikmin 4 and Metroid Prime 4, right? That's
true.
It.
I guess Metroid Prime 4, I forget about that, but I almost feel like that's kind of a lost cause for the Switch. It could be a lost cause for the Switch. You know what I mean? I feel like that could be just totally a Switch 2 launch game. Or not even. Like, like, you know, a Switch 2 launch year game. Maybe cross on both consoles. Mm-hmm. But kind of interesting to think that they don't really do... The only thing they did like that, right? Like, that was kind of like a launching on both consoles was Breath of the Wild, right? Kind of interesting to think about. Like... You know, they did re-releases of old stuff, but yeah. Anyway,
it's a weird situation for the Switch. So I guess my question for you is, we don't have that much announced. One, when is Nintendo going to announce their next drop of news? And two, what do you think that news looks like?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, I would assume they would do something in June. You know, I would assume that they would want, but isn't that funny? It's almost June and there's nothing announced. Mm-hmm. So if it's not June, I mean, surely it's July. I mean, it's, you know, they would want to promote Pikmin 4 and Zelda. I don't know. It's such a weird era right now.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very weird. If I had to bet, it would be in June, you know, and I think that they're just holding their cards close, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think there will be a Nintendo Direct before Pikmin 4 comes out. I don't know if it'll be June 5th or whatever, because it doesn't need to be from Nintendo's perspective. They just put out one of the biggest launches on the entire console, probably. I mean, Breath of the Wild sold 30 million units or whatever. It's a super popular game, and this one is taking the internet by storm, at least in the first week after. Like, I was reading a Nintendo Life article, and they were posting screenshots of people going like, oh, I've been playing 115 hours, or I've been playing 70, 80 hours, which is wild, but that also shows the dedication to the game. And you also have Pikmin 4, another major release coming out. So they have 2 months, basically, to drop news that wouldn't interrupt the flow of things. So I see two possibilities. One, we're close to a new system coming out, whether it's next March or next summer or whatever, and they don't actually do another Direct until September. And they just do basically a Twitter announcement for something like mid-tier to come out in August or September. Paper Mario was announced that way during COVID, so it could be something like that. Or, then the Nintendo Direct. Because Paper Mario was 3 years ago now, although it was COVID, so you would imagine that stuff would maybe get moved around. You don't know. But that's one possibility.
The thing is the Switch's library is so vast right now that they've kind of done everything. They've almost done like every franchise I can think of, you know, that would be worth doing. Like, you know, I feel like if they did like a Punch Out, that would be an epic thing. I feel like that wouldn't be like a spit out thing. If they did like a Pilot Wings, I just don't see them doing a Pilot Wings. You know what I mean? I can think of any viable like 2023 games that they would. I'm so like out of it because I like, unless it's a, I could see them doing a collection. Oh, dude, I could definitely see them doing Super Mario Galaxy 2. I could see them re-releasing that, and it could be a standalone game, I bet. Or standalone download, you know, and maybe then they do another batch of those 3D, you know, games or something. But I could see a remake, which honestly, everything's a remake, right? Everything besides Pikmin 4 and Zelda are remakes this year, basically, it seems like.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah, or yeah. The other thing I was just going to say was that the other possibility is that they do a Direct and there's still a huge pipeline of Switch games, contrary to both of our beliefs. Because who knows, maybe the system's not ready yet. Maybe they're still making the games.
Well, I feel like this was just like a recent thing to say. Like, oh, the Switch is done. Like, it's funny, right? I feel like before Zelda, I don't know. I felt like, yeah, like, let's...
They're still selling out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like, I never thought once...
Does Nintendo need it?
Yeah, it's just interesting. So, I mean, obviously, we are late into the system's life, but it doesn't feel like it. Like, it doesn't feel like it did on the Wii U. You know what I mean? Like, the Wii U is dead, like, 3 years in. And, you know, it's...
Right.
And so, I'm not getting that feeling. Like, I feel like they could have a packed year, like you said. I think they could definitely... I just don't know what it would be, because everything... It's such a huge library. But I just, like... I wanted to bring up something that's just so interesting to me because I, like a month ago, I was just looking at sales for like the sale numbers of Nintendo platforms, like of Nintendo franchises and why and like what they, and it's unbelievable. Like, did you, like, for instance, like, did you know that Mario Party Superstars, the 2021 rehash of a bunch of old games? Did you know that that's sold millions more than the entire Pikmin franchise has sold? That one game has sold more than the entire Pikmin franchise.
How much has the Pikmin franchise sold?
Why don't you guess? Let's make a game of it. How much do you think the Pikmin, Pikmin 2, New Play Control Pikmin, New Play Control Pikmin 2, Pikmin 3, Hey Pikmin, Pikmin 3 Deluxe, and Pikmin 4. So we're not counting the iOS game, but all those, imagine.
12 million.
7.6 million units.
So Luigi's Mansion 3 has sold more than the entire Pikmin franchise.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So that's why, to me, I look at this and I go, this is a passion project that I am so thankful for. Like, that's what I didn't think Pikmin 4 would ever going to happen ever again, because I don't think it makes too much sense. But then the other thing that caught my attention was Fire Emblem. Let's think about Fire Emblem real quick, okay? Do you know anything about Fire Emblem, about the sales? I mean, what about Fire Emblem the past 10 years, right? It's been ridiculous, right? Like, you know, since Awakening, right? It's been amazing. But do you know how many sales? So what if I told you, did you know? This is insane. You're not even going to believe me. That Super Mario Party, Super Mario Party on the Switch, you know? The first one that came out. That has sold millions more units than the entire Fire Emblem franchise.
Even Three Houses, which sold like 3 or 4 million on its own?
Yes. Is that Jeez not Louise. Unbelievable? Now, I guess this isn't taking an N-Gage, but I think N-Gage is like at 1 million, but I think it's still. So Mario Party, Super Mario Party, 2018 Switch game, has sold 18.8 million copies, okay? And Fire Emblem, guess how many Fire Emblem has?
What was the Mario Party one?
18.8 million. That one game.
So I want to be optimistic and say 14 million, but...
Okay. And this would be... And the funny thing is, this is like worldwide, by the way. This is worldwide sales. So
I'm gonna say 12. Actually, I'm gonna settle on 12.
Right now, not counting Fire Emblem Engage, it's 16.1 mil.
Oh, cool! Good for them. That's actually great.
So it's crazy because if I'll just go through like the first game was 0.3 million, then 0.3, then 0.7, 0.5, 0.1, 0.3, 0.9. That was when you get to GBA, okay? GBA almost hit 1 million with Blazing Blade. Then the second one, Sacred Stones, 0.9 again. Then on the GameCube, 0.5. Wii, 0.5. DS, 0.6. That Shadow Dragon game, the remake. I guess there was a Japanese-only one in 2010 from Fire Emblem. That sold 0.25. And then that, so all of those, none of them have ever hit 1 million. None of them. Not even a, and there's like a billion, like, why are they making those games? Like, isn't that funny? Like, a total passion project. I'm glad they did. I love the games, you know what I mean? But then you get to Awakening, 2.3 million. I mean, isn't that insane? That's like all the games put together before that. And then you get to Fates. Guess how much Fates was?
Oh man, 1 million? No, like
Fates.
Not like
right.
1 million.
Fates was like the triple campaign thing, and I don't know how they exactly counted that. I'm sure they counted it just as the base units, not the DLC. But that was 3 million. Fates sold more than Awakening. You know what I mean? Okay, that's crazy. Yeah. And then you get to Shadows of Valentia. Now, what do you think about that one?
I'd say that was less. That was probably 1 or 2.
So it's 0.75. 750,000. Isn't that funny?
That one came out quiet. It did.
It came out after the Switch was out. I mean, it literally came out. You know what I mean? So that's not fair. But then you get to Three Houses, which is in 2019. And then you know how much that is.
Yep, I said 3 or 4. And I that one I actually did look up because I wanted to check my math on that.
3.8.
Right.
So... It's on the upswing. Like, it is absolutely still totally going up the upswing on, you know, 2.3 to 3. You can't really count 3DS because it's 3DS, and when the Switch was out, nothing did good. And then Three Houses at 3.8. It's also, you know, edging towards 4. Now, I don't think N-Gage is going to do Three Houses numbers. I don't think. I feel like they did release those, and it was like 1 million around. Whatever. Now... And just for fun, spin-offs, okay? Spin-offs. So there's 4 games, right? There's the 2 Warriors, and then there's the 2 Sharp FE games, the 2 releases.
Right.
How many do you think they sold on the Wii U of the Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE?
Tokyo Mirage Sessions, I think, is going to be 1 million max and probably less.
On Wii U, it's 0.33.
Oh, no, I was thinking Switch, but yeah.
Okay. So you think Switch?
I'd say 1 million or less.
It's these say, and I remember this was on that game that one of our listeners made for us. The Japanese release, and again, I don't know why it says just Japan, so maybe I don't know what it doesn't have, but in Japan it sold 0.039, 39,000.
That's.
You know what I mean?
That's also like early on, right? And that wasn't through 2023.
That was 2020 whatever, right? When it released, so I don't know. So, and then, yeah. But Fire Emblem, both Warriors games sold 1 million. So that's crazy. You know what I mean?
Here's my theory about everything you're sort of saying in the question you're positing. Is uh-huh. Think about Netflix. No one likes Netflix. People use Netflix and people
Netflix.
Like some of the shows on Netflix, but a lot of people hate Netflix. And the most practical, reasonable reason for doing so, other than whatever monopoly and like the sharing stuff that's coming out where like they want you to pay an extra $7.99 for other households. One of the main reasons a lot of people very reasonably dislike Netflix is that if it doesn't perform, if a show doesn't perform within its first season up to a certain metric, it gets canceled, which means you have shows that are promising, that are great, that are like doing well, but let's say need another season to find their footing, which is, hey, that's the case with Seinfeld. That's the case with The Office. They needed their second season to become one of the best shows ever. Probably King of the Hill. Well, King of the Hill is probably great immediately, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
well,
so many shows
are
that are the best.
I know
ever.
What you're saying. Yes, I agree with you. Yes, yeah, you need to give them some legs. Yeah, to develop. Yeah,
yeah, like you need to believe in them. But Netflix, it's very data driven, and they shut stuff down immediately. And because of that, a lot of the people who might be considered core Netflix fans probably bailed. Or didn't, like, become, like, evangelists for it. Because, like, they're canceling the shows I like. Like, who cares? And so, conversely, I think one of the reasons why Nintendo is awesome. And, like, I think, or let me phrase it this way. I think one of the reasons why Nintendo greenlights these games that aren't necessarily going to be as profitable as your Pokemons or your Mario Parties or your Mario Karts. Which can include Xenoblade, it can include Pikmin, it can include a bunch of games, which, I mean, they're not Chibi Robo Ziplash. They're probably profitable, a lot of these, like, Switch games that were like, oh, they're doing a little modest. Xenoblade's probably still making plenty of profit for them. But the reason that they put out these, let's say, more modest games probably is not just because Miyamoto likes Pikmin. It's probably also because it keeps their core audience happy, which are us. And if you have these semi-niche, high-quality games that go like, oh, there's that Nintendo magic I love, the people who are dedicated Nintendo fans, who are going to have the highest console game attach rates, are going to buy a lot of games and they're going to stay in that ecosystem. So giving someone Pikmin 4 might also enable that consumer or empower that consumer to buy 10 other games because Switch is the system they're getting Pikmin 4 on and Nintendo is giving them the games they want. So I think they're, and it also makes you like Nintendo because they're making these cool, not weird because it's they're these long running series, but these not the games you'd expect. I think it's also great from a visual perspective too.
And, yep.
which is hard to quantify, but is important because there's a reason people love Nintendo and don't love Netflix, right?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I do find it though, like in the Switch, which is definitely the step down from the Nintendo charm, like the UI alone, mm-hmm. the website that is the eShop, just everything, how everything is pruned and skillfully pruned to make as much money as possible. Which I cannot fault them for it. But in this time, I was just like, I'm just amazed that Pikmin 4 was still happening when it doesn't make any sense that two Switch Mario Party games have sold more units the entirety of Fire Emblem and Pikmin. You know, that's just unbelievable. Now, getting to what I think could happen, which is interesting, is Donkey mm-hmm. Kong. Okay. I look at Donkey Kong and like, for instance, I mean, look at these numbers, right? Thinking about what I just told you, like Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. Let's just talk to Jungle Beat real quick on the GameCube. How many do you think that sold?
Couple hundred K.
Right? It's the bongos, right? Like it's a bongo game that you play, right? Dude, it sold 1.3 million. That game, right? And then it sold another, mm-hmm. 560,000 on the Wii. Okay. So You look at that Donkey Kong Truck. Oh, go ahead.
The thing I've heard, just to add on to that, is that one of the reasons why probably Retro made Donkey Kong for a while, it didn't go back to Prime, is because the Returns games sold gangbusters over the Prime games.
Well, let's talk about
that,
right?
Is my understanding.
So, yeah. So, how much do you think, and we'll just take both games together, the Wii and the 3DS of Donkey Kong Returns, right? 3D and regular. How many do you think it sold?
5 mil.
That's 9.4. 9.4
awesome.
Million.
That's
so
great.
More, right. Yeah, amazing. So huge.
It's like
huge
a Final
franchise.
Fantasy game, basically.
I mean,
yeah.
Gigantic franchise, right? And then you get Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. Guess how much that sold?
Between, like, if we count the Switch version, I'm saying 15.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? So, yeah, that was. So on the Wii U, it sold 2 million, okay? 2.02. So 2 million. For an
right.
install base of, what, 13?
Which is crazy.
Insane.
Yeah, that's a huge attach rate.
And
for
then
that.
That quick, you know, that crazy quick, but very well done remaster on the Switch with the funky mode sold double that, 4.12, which I just think is, it, now, yeah,
oh, that's
weird,
lower
right?
than I expected.
It is lower, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's a combined of 6 million. But still, you look at these numbers and you go, I mean, Xenoblade 3, has sold 1.8. So, you know, and think about the budget on that game. And I'm just thinking, it's just, I find this fascinating. So, you know, Donkey Kong total sales of the main Donkey Kong games, of Donkey Kong Country games, 53 million. So I look at that and I go, I could see that being Donkey Kong. And then you look at even like, and then like the regular Donkey Kong games, 23 million. Like mm-hmm. everything, like the Game & Watch and like the NES arcade. And then the Donkey Kong spinoffs, like Diddy Kong Racing, Donkey Kong and stuff, 10 million. So I think Donkey Kong is a very, everyone knows that name. He's highly involved in the Mario movie. I think Donkey Kong is happening. I think that's, and that could happen this year, and that could be a huge thing for Christmas. And it's something that doesn't really, and I think it could be that 3D game, you know, it could be the Mario move, the Mario people working on it. But I think it's justified in his sales and stuff. Again, since they have the big exclusive Mario game, interesting. So they have a couple. They have the Bowser's Fury too. So, and dude, those games are ridiculous as well when you look at the numbers. But I just find it all really, really interesting when you look at that. And it's like, okay, if I'm making like the Mario Party, those things are on fire on the Switch. So could I see them coming out with another Mario Party? Of course I could, because it's 2018 and then 2021 and now it's 23. And they've sold like 30 million of these things and people want the new things. They want Joy-Con games to play. I want party games to play with my friends. Makes sense, too. So I think they could do a, you know, I mean, Super Mario Party 2, or they could do a DLC pack, but I think it's going to be something sold in stores. So I'm thinking a new Mario Party and a new Donkey Kong could happen this year.
I think Mario Party's a good one to pull from. I was thinking about this, too, and I have a short list in my head. I think whatever the Koizumi, not EAD Tokyo, but whatever that team is, the Mario team, whatever they're working on, and I strongly feel it's Donkey Kong. And I wouldn't even be surprised if it's Donkey Kong with some notes from Bowser's Fury, however that game turns out. Like,
Cranky's
I wouldn't be surprised
Fury?
If Bowser's Fury, not Cranky's Fury, but like the design of Bowser's Fury is somehow applied to like an open world platformer in the Donkey Kong. Which could even
that.
Use like part of the models of like the Mario movie. Like I think you could pull a Donkey Kong redesign there. But I think that's a definite either cross platform or Switch game. I think it's going to be one of those two. I think there's an opportunity for a Mario and Luigi. Even though Alpha Dream's not around anymore, I think that there's still probably money to be made in people who are able to make a Mario and Luigi game.
That's, I know, it's funny that they did those remasters, because that would have been a great remaster. I mean, to even, you know what I mean, to do the original game on the Switch in 3D, I think would have been, I mean, that would be absolutely insane. Mario and Luigi, like, Superstar Saga. I know they remade it for 3DS, so it's not going to happen probably, but still, that would be amazing.
Yep. I was going to say maybe the Wind Waker and Twilight Princess HD remakes, but to be honest, I actually don't necessarily think there's room, at least this year.
Honestly, I don't think there is. I think that just sabotages
more. Zelda's too big.
Like, what I think they would, I think that could definitely be a 2024 Switch release. I really do think it could be and even though the next one is possibly out, it could be a 2024 Switch release. Wind Waker HD. But then again, dude, are they doing the DLC for Tears of the Kingdom? You know what I mean? It's a very weird. I think the launch Zeldas make so much sense. Twilight Princess and Breath of the Wild, right? Those were really, like, exciting new system, new Zelda, magical, right? Just magical times. And then you get the Skyward Sword and the Tears of the Kingdom, which are also magical in a different way. Very, very interesting, different take on it, because it's like you're setting up this new ecosystem with the launch games. And this one's like, where does it go? Is this going to be released on the next system as well? Like, as a deluxe edition, as a definitive, like, it could. I could see it doing that with some, you know, with some, or it's a DLC. Or obviously, do they do DLC and then sell that as the definitive edition for Switch 2 with, you know, 60 frames a second? You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, which would be probably a smart idea. I don't know. It's crazy. It's just, it's weird.
I think there's room. I think you're right. It is weird. I also think there's room for a bunch of those remasters, right? Like Kid Icarus Uprising. People were talking about F-Zero GX, right? People were talking about, let's say, another Kirby game or Star Fox or another like a Rhythm Heaven or a bunch of games that you could either port over or do a new version over. There are two developers, I guess, I'm also thinking about are sort of my sort of final thoughts on this conversation, personally, which are, one, Bandai Namco. They always got them on something, or they have for the last few years. I'm like, what are they cooking up as their, like, here's our B-tier Pokemon Snap something-something game? Like, would they be making, like, some, like, platformer, like a Wario game? Could they be doing like a Mario and Luigi, which would be, that seems like the type of thing you would put a Bandai Namco on, or there's a lot of other things. And then the other one I'm thinking about is Mario Strikers was such a small video game that I'm like, is Next Level Games working on something else that is further along in the pipeline than we might think?
Luigi's Mansion 4, right?
Maybe. I think it could be. Maybe Luigi's Mansion 4. I mean, like, maybe Punch-Out.
You say Luigi's Mansion had
10 mil.
That's insane.
You'd have to confirm, but that's my. I think that's true.
Yeah. Interesting. I wanted to say about Kirby real quick, because that's another really. What we haven't talked a lot about is besides. Do you know what the top selling games in the Kirby franchise are? The first game, Kirby's Dream Land for the Game Boy Advance, and that's sales I'm talking about. 5 million sales.
Ooh.
It's, and then everything else in between that, and then Kirby Star Allies on the Switch was in between like 300,000 and like 2, and then Star Allies was 4 million, and then Kirby in the Forgotten Land is the best selling Kirby game of all time, 6.1 million. How crazy, right? To have that 3D, the first 3D adaptation of Kirby is the best-selling game. They must be like, oh my goodness, what have we been doing? And I think that's like, of course, you know, they're going to be like, oh, we're making, you know, Kirby's totally 3D now. I find that stuff fascinating, because it's like, wow. Because I think it really can help fuel what do you think they're going to be doing, you know? And I guess, and even the Return to Dreamland, I think that helped with that, because that sold 1.46 mil, a remake, 1.5 million. You know what I mean? It's pretty amazing. I think they got to be happy with that. So anyway, I love it. I love talking.
The Switch is so popular that it is taking these franchises that were, let's say, on the, not the outskirts, but let's say were never the big hits, and then they're giving them, they're punching them up a bit. They're giving them sales that they haven't seen previously. Luigi's Mansion's a great example. Kirby's a great example. But the one I'm surprised you haven't brought up is Metroid Dread, which is the best-selling Metroid game and has sold like 2.9 million.
Yep.
Like 3 million. Which means Metroid's on an upswing,
yes.
Which makes, and I'm sure Prime Remastered sold really well for however much it cost.
It's 1.09 mil. I mean, it sold over a million. That's amazing.
Which
it really is.
Probably a big profit.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and that's what's so interesting. Like, the total sales of Metroid series, the total sales, it's 21 million, okay? Okay, that's the total sales.
Yeah.
Mario, remember. And Super Mario Party sold 18.8 million. Super Mario Party on the Switch has almost sold as much as the entirety of the Metroid franchise. That doesn't make any sense, Balix. That's insane. Yeah. So it's just, man. And that's just one Mario game. And then you should see like the Mario game. Like the Mario is crazy. But anyway, we can talk more sales stuff on future stuff because it's fun to talk about. But yeah. I'll use that as the driving force, and it's fun to think. But yeah, my predictions: Donkey Kong and Super Mario, and Mario Party, and I don't think Next Level's. I hope that's like a hopeful thing. I don't think Next Level's work. Like, I think that they poured a lot into that game, only to have it be the game I desperately bought for my friends for Christmas, and I still haven't gotten it.
I enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm glad.
I think Nintendo's looking at all these games that are like sort of glowing up these franchises, and they're probably looking at Star Fox, and they're like, Star Fox can probably be one of these two. I think they should wait until the next Nintendo system to launch a new
Star Fox. See, you're right.
Like, they should give it a good install base and do the Luigi's Mansion thing to it.
Agreed.
And I also think, and I feel strongly that with an American audience, the right F-Zero game could do gangbusters. It has to be the right one. It can't be the hardcore, how the heck do I play this F-Zero game?
Yeah.
But I think you're just crashing
Forza,
into walls.
Do you think
a
Forza? Forza-like? Do you think that would be a good idea?
No, I would say make it more character-focused. I would say make it more colorful. Give it even a campaign or a story, and make the game have a good learning curve.
Are you thinking open world?
That sort of starts.
I mean, but you're thinking like Advance Wars.
That.
Like, it could be like in a way of like there's a story and you're going from race to race. Is that what you're
thinking? Something accessible with color, with character that could be either cups with a few cutscenes or story mode, like a Mario sports game. It doesn't need to be much.
Yeah.
But also with gameplay that lets you in gently and then ramps up to make people be like, oh, this is why everyone loves F-Zero. Because those games are impenetrable unless you're willing to commit some time to learn how to play it.
Right.
So I think the right structure of an F-Zero game could also be one of these. And I'm curious what Nintendo does.
Agreed. I do want to say one more thing because it's amazing. Guess how much
in total
sales the WarioWare franchise has done?
0.97.
Yeah. Take a real stab. How many units? Every single game.
Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Was serious. Under a million. Like, just under a million.
You think the entirety of the franchise has sold under a million?
Oh, there's a lot of them. Ah, 2 million.
9.6 mil.
I've been off today. Usually my guesses are okay, but they're not on today.
Yeah, so
oh,
the first
okay.
one was 1, and then, Well, the Game Boy Advance one was 1, and then they're all hover. But the amazing thing is the, DS and Wii were the biggest ones, 2.4 and 2.3 mil. But then everything has just kind of been kind of so-and-so. up until WarioWare Get It Together, which did 1.27. So it's a little upswing as well. So good anyway.
Yeah, we should downswing this episode. We should.
What do you mean?
Oh, as in we should... I'm hungry.
Oh, you mean we should... Gotcha, we should end the episode.
Yeah, I was being cute.
Gotcha, I like it. I've never heard downswing as a thing. Sorry, that must be a Boston thing.
I was just playing off your word.
What was I heard? I heard the other
thing. Yes.
I heard something that people from Boston, an adjective they use for everything. Do you know what that is?
Wicked?
Yes, that's what it was. Yes. And I've never heard you say that
That's
before.
True.
I'd like you to start saying that now. That's totally wicked, man.
Wicked smart type thing. Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha.
Talk Nintendo podcast.
Tack.
No, that's a little Wisconsin. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have... I have a New England accent, I would guess, but not like heavy
the
Bostonian.
The only guy that had the Bostonian accent was our first Uber driver on our first trip to Boston. That was the only one. And he had the total... He had the Texas, Massachusetts. He had the guy from King of the Hill. Buy me a mint julep, J.R. He had the exact... I was like, yes, this guy's amazing. And then I didn't mean... And everyone else was a certain part of Great Britain. So... There's lots of Europeans in Boston. Anyway.
But you know what's also in Great Britain is Twitter. And you can find us on Twitter.
Twitter.
At twitter.com/TalkNintendoPod. That's Talk Nintendo.
P-O-D.
Yeah, there you go. P-I-D.
P-I-D, J-I.
There you go.
Wicked.
And then... You can support the Patreon that supports our mother site, Nintendo World Report, at patreon.com/NWR. That's I got to say that again. Patreon.com/NWR. That's patreon.com slash.
Thirsty Mage. Now, I want to say you're fading fast, Balax. I can hear you like you need to get some calories in you, buddy. So, yes. No,
wait, is it my audio or my energy?
Your energy. No. Yeah, your energy.
Okay, my audio's been okay.
Your
audio's
okay, fantastic. Good. And no, check out patreon.com/NWR. It's to help support our site and all of its costs and whatnot. So yeah.
Got that Jeb low energy today, I guess.
Yeah. We're vibing out today. And yeah, I'm sad that Casey's not here for the big fancy 350 show, but we'll make it up next week. We'll do something
actually,
fun next week.
The last point I'll make is that for me talking smack of going into this episode of like we got nothing, this little segment that we pulled together at the last second has actually been one of our most lively discussions on this show in months and years
ever since you started, really. But yeah, I want to wish you a happy 105th official podcast.
Thank you,
my friend.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we didn't.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry we didn't. You know, obviously, I'm a mess. But you know, yeah. I would have. No, that's really fun though. It's really. I mean, think about it. You've been almost a third of the podcast. You know, that's pretty amazing, right? When you think about that.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? I will bring this up. Because I think it's amazing. Is the RFN, you know, do you know what episode they're on? They're like 900 or whatever, 800 something.
Sure.
And they started, did you know that I did the music for the, do you know I do their theme song? Like, did you even know that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I did.
Casey didn't know that for like literally years, you know, it was funny. Mm-hmm. Like on this podcast, I think I told him. But yeah, to think like that I've done it for more than half of RFN. Which started when you were like literally nine. Like it started in 2006, which is just crazy to think about.
I've been
like it's almost 20
I've
years.
Been I've been listening to Radio Free Nintendo since it was in the double digit episodes. Like I think Mike's Glenn's or earlier.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like literally since I was 12, I've been listening to Nintendo World Report podcast. That's true.
I think I've. Isn't that funny? That's so funny. Right? Now, yeah. I want to say, I'm sorry. And you can maybe I'll use this as a stinger. In fact, I'll use this as a stinger. See everyone.
Bye.
I think that my first interaction, when I got into like podcasts with Nintendo, I found out that there was in 2009, 2010. It was 2010 after the introduction of the 3DS. That's when I found out that there was actually video game websites. Okay, mm-hmm. I know that sounds crazy, yeah. But I wasn't into it. And then I listened to Nintendo. I probably literally typed in podcasts like Nintendo. You know what I mean? And I got Nintendo voice chat. And I listened to that, and I loved it. It was great. And then I found Radio Free Nintendo. I was like, I'll just go ahead and try this one. And it was, I turned it on. And this was during the Wii U days. So I guess this was quite a bit. Yeah, I don't know. But the first thing that Johnny said on it was something like, this is the, and it's funny knowing him now, but when I didn't know anything about him, he's like, this is the most optimistic podcast, Nintendo podcast ever. And the way he said that, and I was like, oh man, he's jaded. Like, this guy's so jaded. And like, I remember like, and it turned me off so much. Like, it was just because it was just funny. And I obviously, and then so I actually like turned it off. I remember, not out of hate. It was just like, I'll return back to this, And then I came back, and it's just really funny knowing that I actually turned them off and then turned them back on, and they're like one of my favorite podcasts and inspired this podcast. So I thought that was really, I remember telling Johnny about that, and it's just funny. So thinking about our podcast, how any podcast that we start could be someone's first, it's really interesting. And I hope it's not this one, because I don't know.
The lineage of podcasts is so crazy, because if we're talking about podcasts I've been listening to since I was 12. I mean, Johnny Metz, I've literally heard on podcasts since I was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Player One Podcast, like some of the hosts I think are probably still doing it. Phil Theobald, Chris Johnston, Greg Stewart. I think I've probably been listening to them since I was like 12 or 13. Same with the CAGcast. And they're still running like 900 episodes later. Yep. And it's very interesting to have that connection to yourself. And in fact, the thing I will add in addition to that is, so one day when like we have kids, they're older, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what were our dads doing when they were our age or a little older than us? There is going to be audio recordings of you at like,
that's crazy, 18, to think 19, about.
20 and me at 17, 18. Yeah. And it's just, And it's not, it's going to be like 2040. Those MP3s are still going to be there, yeah, probably. And it's not going to be that far. And that's insane to me.
That's like, scary.
You'll find one photo of your dad as a kid, but to think there's whole archives of like, you and like your enough children's audio age
for us, for AI to take us over. Like, yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. That is scary to think about. Oh man. Anyway, well, that's scary.
So time moves upsettingly.
This is our
fast
Halloween episode. Anyway, I gotta go. I'm so hungry. Yeah. And this is an hour and a half podcast.
Yeah,
now,
me too.
Which is crazy. So this is a double podcast. For our 350th right. episode, it's a double podcast. There you go, everyone. All right. We love you. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
Bye. I think I got
How'd
it in there.
Pick up?
I think I picked it up. Yeah, a little bit. Should be fine. Okay. Do you want to introduce it?
Sure. That sounds fun. I don't remember the exact way of other than like.
It's okay.
Hello and welcome.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. I'm going to do it my
another,
way.
To and another episode of Talk Nintendo. You know, that's the enormous. All
right.
And then I don't know what episode it is.
I got you.
All right.
All right. I'm sorry. Can we pause for 1 second?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Sorry. I have returned. I apologize. It is summer, and our yard is attached to conservation land. So we just get bugs occasionally in the house. I mean, everyone in summer does, but we get a decent number of bugs in the house. And I was just making contact, or eye contact, with like a flea. Or not a flea, that'd be bad. But some random bug for like 10 or 15 seconds, and I just could not continue speaking while I was having a stare down with an insect. So I'm back.
Very, very nice. I'm not editing any of that out. The whole everything. It's just.
I tried to be quick.
Like let's see. Let's see. There's like a minute and a half of just nothing. I love it.
There you go. So that's
to celebrate. That's just, one, to celebrate 350. Point. You know what we're doing for 350 is we're gonna have 3 minutes and 50 seconds of silence.
Of Alex silently killing a bug.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep. So what were you gonna say?